Hello and welcome back to the History of Video Games. My name is Ben and I'm joined by the one and only Wes. How you doing today, Wes?
Doing great, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm just chilling. Had a very busy weekend. I was playing a bunch of shows and doing some traveling. But I'm kind of, you know, the weekend's past now. I had a somewhat relaxing Monday, so, you know, looking forward to getting back into, like, normal rhythm.
Yeah. Getting into the groove of things. No, I'm on, you know, I work at a university and it's spring break, so it's a little bit of a chill week for us. Still working, but pretty chill Monday as well, so feeling good, vibing, ready to talk about some video games, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you have to talk to us about today, Wes? Anything interesting?
Yes, and good job pretending that we didn't just talk about what it was I was going to talk about. I believed you 100%. Yeah. But you recently prepared for me a ROM hacked version of Pokemon Fire Red to play. So basically an, you know, slightly tweaked version of the game that I know and love. And although, I mean, I don't know Fire Red front to back, but I know enough about Pokemon that I was like, okay, yeah, this will be a good time. And I forgot that you could edit the dialogue, but boy, Professor Oak does not greet you the way that he normally does in the version that you prepared for me. But you gave me a couple stipulations, you know, a couple guidelines that I had to follow to beat it. One, I was only going up to Misty because, you know, you were sort of like testing it out, right? Just doing a small little thing to play. So the second gym, and I could only ever have 4 Pokemon at the time, and I could not level any of those Pokemon above level 21. I think that was all of the...
Yeah, I try to keep it somewhat simple.
Yeah. No, and it was fun. I mean, I like, you know, figuring out problems within the confines of rules is always kind of fun for me. So it was interesting, and especially because you changed up Pokemon spawns. I went to Viridian Forest, and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to find here. Like, am I going to find any grass-type Pokemon? Because that would help me with both Brock and Misty, rock-type and water-type, pretty good. And I did. You snuck in a mythical Pokemon from the second generation, Celebi, in there. Although, you got to tell me, did you make it so you can only encounter it once? Because I ran out of Pokeballs, was forced to kill it, and then never saw one again.
Nope, it's just fairly rare. It's I didn't make them too rare. I want to say it was 5%.
That's insane to me. Maybe it was only a certain part of the Viridian Forest, or I just got extremely unlucky because I grinded.
Probably unlucky, yeah.
I did a lot of grinding in that area too.
Just you really wanted it.
Yeah. And also just to level up before Brock, and man, I didn't get it, but I was grass type is what I was hoping for because I knew that would be perfect for the first two gyms. Didn't get that, but still got a bunch of other stuff. You put in a like Poliwag in there, water type that had... I realized it had the ability water absorb, so water attacks just healed it. So I was like, oh, okay, I can use that on Misty too. So that was fun, you know, because it just changes up the routine that I'm used to, and you change the starters as well. We had just talked about how one of your new favorite Pokemon is Skarmory.
Yeah.
The, you know, steel bird. And so I looked at the other options. I was like, nah, that is pretty cool. I'm going to go for that.
You have to.
Although, bummed me out that he didn't learn a steel type move before I fought the rock type Pokemon, because that would have been good, but still got through it all right. And I really didn't run into too many challenges. I mean, I did a lot of grinding, but when I got to Misty, she stomped me the first time because I was like, I could do this with level 18 Pokemon, and I couldn't. I was like, there's a reason Ben made the maximum level 21, so I'm going to grind everyone up to level 21. Found another legendary white Kyurem that you snuck in there. And at first, my pride wouldn't let me use any legendaries. I was like, nah, I got to do this without any. But I decided to use it, and it helped a lot.
You got to.
And also because it was a Pokemon I've never used in any of the games before. So I was like, oh, yeah, totally. Got to use this. Got to have fun with it. So, yeah, the whole thing was very fun. It's like cool going through the game. And then it's just everything's the same, but everything is different. And you don't know what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, I had to admit, Wes, I didn't really play test it before I sent it to you. So I'm glad that the difficulty felt like it was just right.
Yes, yeah.
And I basically made the whole thing in one night. Basically what happened was like I wanted to watch this Lakers game, but it didn't start till 10 p.m. And I was like, if I'm in bed watching this, I'm definitely falling asleep. So I had to be at my computer doing something. I decided to make this hack in one night, pretty much. And I did, like, I wanted it to be nice and short, and I wanted to experiment with some different things. I've never edited the text before, so that's one thing I did. Not in very many places, right. Just a couple places. I also, for White Kurum, you know, like, the Gen 2 Pokemon are in Fire Red, you know? They're
right,
because
it's
Dex.
A remake, yeah.
Yeah, but White Kurum is like Gen 5 or something, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So I had to actually like add in the sprites for it myself, which I've never done before. And luckily, there was a database of sprites I could pull from that were in the Fire Red style that somebody else had made. So it wasn't hard to do, but it was just, you know, that was something I'd never done before, and I wanted to try it out. Changed the color palettes for a lot of stuff, which I'm sure you caught.
Yeah.
And added Pokemon and stuff, not only to the wild, but to the gym leaders to make them a little harder.
Yep.
But that was pretty much it. The things I want to really try out next, like, there's got to be a way to skip the intro, you know?
Right.
And just have you start, like, already with a level 10 Pokemon or something. I know that's possible. I want to try that. And then also, you know, making a custom map seems like it's going to be a pain and hard and require a lot of creativity, which I don't have right now. But I think instead what I could do is, you know how like when you leave your house in Pallet Town, then you arrive like outside your house in Pallet Town, you know, like you go through the door.
Right.
I think it's fairly easy to just set that like pointer, is what it's called, to a different destination, so that you walk out of your house and you're in, you know, like whatever the big city's called or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I can do that and have you walk into a different building and now you're in like a cave, you know, or something, you know, and of make a map using the existing features, but just in a weird order.
I mean, people make randomizers for those types of games for sure, like doorway entrance randomizers. So I bet there's stuff out there.
Yeah. So I'm sure I can do that. I want to do that next for sure. And yeah, just keep messing around. I enjoy, you know, messing around with different Pokemon that you're not familiar with. And what was your team at the end, by the way? I saw Paris was in there.
Yeah.
What else did you have?
Let me, I think I have a picture of it because I forgot. So Paris, because I was hoping it would learn grass moves. It did not by the max level. White Kurum, because, you know, killing it. Pikachu. Lightning type for the water types was good.
Oh, good.
And then Skarmory, just because it was pretty strong on its own and I just couldn't get rid of it because I'm like, oh, it's my starter. Got to keep it with me. So, yeah. Not as many evolved Pokemon as I was thinking, but level 21 is pretty low, I guess. So,
yeah, I should have. I can change when they evolve and I should have done that, but didn't have time.
No, but still very cool. And you've got a willing guinea pig in me whenever you test any of those ROMs, you know?
Okay, well, that's good to know. I'm sure I'll make another one next time the Lakers are on or something. And
I'll watch the game. Nice. Cool.
All right, cool.
But yeah, that's what I've been playing recently. What have you been up to?
I'm actually going to do two quick games.
Okay.
Again, actually, my backlog is not as large as it used to be.
Because
I think Fallout 4 kept me
right.
around a while.
Right.
But I'm going to do two small ones that I did. One is like the oldest one that I haven't talked about yet. That's Star Wars Jedi Knight 2 Jedi Outcast, which is one hell of a title.
Oh, yeah.
And I swear I played this when I was younger and I really enjoyed it. I'm sure I also played the follow-up to this, which I think was Jedi Academy. That's the only one I haven't gone back and played yet. And I think that's supposed to be like the best one. But yeah, this one is Jedi Knight 2. And I played Jedi Knight, the first one, not too long ago. And thought it was pretty good. Or maybe the first one was Jedi Academy. Now I'm getting them mixed up. But anyway, I played the first one in the series not too long ago and enjoyed it quite a lot. I thought I would like Jedi Knight Outcast even better, but I kind of didn't.
Ooh, okay.
Not that it was bad, but I feel like the locations were mostly like indoor Empire facilities, you know, like gray walls for like 80% of the game. And there's a couple moments where you're on like Yavin 4, you know, kind of temple jungle. That's pretty much it. You know, it's just like indoor areas and Yavin 4. Just like in the other games, you start out with a blaster and then get a lightsaber fairly early in the game. And the moment they gave you a lightsaber in this one, they took you to a level where it was a huge open level where everybody had sniper rifles, so the lightsaber was completely useless. And I was like, this is the most horrible level to put after you give me the lightsaber, because right. of course you just want to use the lightsaber. So that was a little annoying. The game was fairly hard. There was like definitely a lot of times I had to do some safe scumming to get through. But yeah, I just didn't like it as much as the last one. It wasn't bad, but kind of uneventful, I think. So I don't have too much to say. It's been a couple months since I played it too, so I'm forgetting some things, I'm sure. But yeah, one that I played, another small one that I played fairly recently ago. I was in the mood to play like a fast clicking game, something like Diner Dash, if you know what that is, like a little management game. I get in the mood to play them sometimes. And actually, my mom plays a lot of those types of games. And I was like, hey, mom, what's a good one for me to get? Because I don't have any that I can play. And she recommended one called Burger Shop, which I've never heard of before. Specifically Burger Shop 2. But of course, knowing me, I was like, well, I should start with Burger Shop 1. they probably introduced some mechanics there. So I bought Burger Shop 1 for like $5 or something. And actually beat it, I don't think in one sitting. I think in two sittings in less than 4 hours. So there wasn't a lot of content there. You can tell this game's quite old. I'm not sure when it came out. But I played it. I was trying to get like 3 stars on every level, like you do in these kind of games. Mm-hmm. And I did that all the way until like the last 10 levels, and it was just getting impossible. And I thought, let's just beat the game and not have to worry about this, because it didn't feel like I was going to get it, So that's basically all I did. I mean, I only played for 4 hours. I mean, I was kind of addicted to it in those 4 hours. Don't get me wrong. Like, the basic gameplay is good. It's like, instead of managing tables and stuff, there's just one big conveyor belt of all the ingredients, and someone wants a burger, and you have to like on the conveyor belt click 2 buns, lettuce, tomato, patty, put it together and then give it to the guy. But it gets more complicated with other recipes and drinks and sides and stuff. So it's a fast management game, which was what I was looking for. But I probably should have gotten Burger Shop 2, which I think has a lot more content and probably looks a little bit better. I think they're making a Burger Shop 3 as well, so definitely check it out if you're into that kind of game. But I mean, it wasn't bad. It was just kind of short.
Yeah. Well, now you're prepared with all the Burger Shop lore, for the sequels.
Yeah, there really wasn't. It was the lore was not great, I'll say. So
that's fair.
But yeah, probably should have avoided this one. That's okay.
At least it was a short game, so you didn't have to sink too much time into it.
No. It was a nice distraction for a couple of days. Mm. But yeah, that's some of the things I've been playing. But I think with that being said, Wes, we should get into our special topic. We've got a new piece of hardware again.
Yes.
They keep coming back.
Oh, yeah.
We're in a new month now, though, so hopefully this is a bit different from some of the things we've been doing lately. And yeah, I think this one's pretty weird. Why don't you talk to the people about the Entex Adventure Vision. What a name.
Yes. Yeah. Entex Adventure Vision. Last big thing we really saw from Entex that's kind of along the same line is the Select a Game handheld cartridge system. And the Adventure Vision is another like cartridge system. So I guess technically like a second generation console. But you think of it more like that category that we've been calling tabletop handheld, which is such an oxymoron, but it's basically like a miniature arcade cabinet that you can pick up and move around, but you could also just sit it on a table and play it. So we've seen that form factor of system before, but the hardware behind this is definitely different, and I'm sure you'll talk about that a little bit later, Ben. The marquee for this says Adventure Vision in like arcade cabinet style, which I really liked. And it has these 4 little divots on the top of it, which people don't know if this is the exact use case for them, but there were 4 games released for it, and they all kind of like the little like tiny cartridges fit perfectly in those little divots. So interesting that it has those little holders for it. It also has a headphone port, which I'm sure was a godsend for parents when they bought this. So you can actually like plug a headphone in and not have all these beeping noises just coming out all over the place. And Entex claimed on the box that this system looked just as good as a plug-in TV system, which is a very bold claim. But one of the main technologies that was used to give this system, or what reviewers have called like a simulated higher resolution, is a spinning mirror behind the screen that reflected red LEDs. So we still have the red LED handheld style kind of visuals that we've seen before, but the spinning mirror gave it a sort of like faster refresh rate and made it look like a higher resolution. Really interesting. It was crucial to design of the system. So when Entex was developing this, they brought on an engineer named Don Baker, who had apparently worked on the A6 gunship before this. So yeah, straight from, maybe he worked on like a radar dish on the gunship and they're like, hey, this guy knows spinning things. Let's get that spinning mirror technology in there. And the idea was brought to Entex by an inventor who had worked with them before named Robert McCaslin. The spinning mirror, though, did make the display wobble slightly as you looked at it. Like, the visual was always kind of wobbling. So I feel like I would get sick pretty fast playing this.
Mm-hmm.
Early on in development, they were looking at a CRT display instead. But apparently that was just way too expensive for what they wanted the product to be priced at. I gotta say, though, the system still seems a bit expensive. I mean, it released at $79.95. I feel like we just talked about the 2600 Supercharger, which released at like $70. Sure, that's not a console all in itself, but I don't know. That's not exactly it's kind of apples to oranges, but the seems like a little bit expensive for this console. And because of the moving parts in the system, there are only 100 known to be in working order today. So I guess they didn't have a super long life, but really interesting console. And Ben, do you have anything to add about, you know, kind of how it looked, how it functioned?
Not too much. I mean, I can tell you that there was only one row of 40 red LEDs, like I lined up, I think vertically in a line, and that made the whole game's graphics, which is insane to me. It's hard to imagine how it works because these 40 red LEDs are just like, you know, turning on and off and syncing with the rotation of the mirror so that like when you fire a bullet, you can see the bullet trail in each frame of the mirror. Like, it's crazy how it would work. You know, it's so hard to understand. I read that the frame rate that it tries to like emulate with the mirror is about 15 frames a second. So it's a little choppy. It definitely wobbles, as you've mentioned. And I mean, there's not too much else to say. I mean, they had sound, but I think the RAM and the ROM aren't very important because there's no like digital graphics. So right. It's not like they're going to really push it. You know, it's just red dots. That's all that this is going to ever display. So it's a little limited for 1982. But, you know, it was a small portable type thing that you didn't need a TV to use it. So it's a bit different, but it is considered a second gen console because it used cartridges and, you know, came out in this time frame. So with that being said, I think we should take a short break and then check out some of the games.
Oh yeah. Hey everybody, welcome back. Let's hop into our timeline today and talk about the Entex Adventure Vision games. As I mentioned at the beginning, these are going to be the only four games that release for it. So not a super long-lived console, but it is very interesting. The first one, which was the pack-in game for the console, was Defender. And I've seen videos of this for just being red dots. It actually is pretty impressive how smooth the graphics are for this. Definitely better than like handheld versions of Defender and Space Invaders and stuff like that.
Yeah, I felt like it had like the physics of Defender pretty well. Like it had that momentum for red LED dots. Crazy.
Yeah.
All right, but the next one that they came out with was called Turtles. It's based off the arcade game Turtles, which we reviewed. It's kind of like a Pac-Man game where you have to, like, I think grab baby turtles and return them to their mother or something like that. This is okay.
And then there was Super Cobra, again, like the arcade game. And, yeah, pretty, you know, low fidelity maybe, but pretty faithful version of Cobra. Even had, like, alternating red dots to make it look like the propeller was spinning on the helicopter, so... I was pretty impressed with it.
And then the final one they came out with is the only one that's not like a third-party title, like a straight-up port of some game that's already been made, and that is Space Force, and it's basically an Asteroids game. So, gotta have one of those on your system. But that's it. Yeah, there's no other games for this whole console, so this is the last time we'll be talking about them, even though it's the first time we're talking about them. So, we're never gonna... touch the Adventure Vision again, but you know, it was cool to take a look at it. I mean, the technology is crazy, but unfortunately, red LED dots are not interesting in 1982. And we've got a lot of good games to go over.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can't spend any time.
Yeah, so let's get to some of those good games that we got. The first one we're going to talk about is my first review for the day is an arcade game called Wiping by Nichibutsu.
Oh, wait, what did you say?
Arcade game called Wiping.
Wiping?
Yeah.
They called it Wiping.
Yeah, you know, just you're wiping. That's it. That's the game.
Okay.
But stick with me here.
But.
It's a Dig Dug style game. Not making it any better. I know. And you're a vacuum, which, as everyone knows, is something that wipes. So,
Don't
pay attention to that. It's also kind of confusing because this game is going to be re-released as Rugrats, where you're like vacuuming up dust bunnies and germs. So it's kind of hard to tell what's the original idea, what's the renaming. Maybe you weren't actually vacuuming when it was called Wiping. You were just like sliding over them. Who knows?
I'm just glad they didn't make a game called Sucking.
Right. Well, that'll be coming out later. Just kidding. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if another one did come out that way. But, you know, it's a Japanese company. Let's blame it on translation issues.
Yeah.
But in the flyers for this, and at some point, the original sprite, I guess, was like, instead of the normal way you use a vacuum, it's just a woman sitting on a gigantic vacuum, riding it to vacuum things up. But then eventually they decided, let's just make it a sentient vacuum with eyeballs instead. And that's what this game has as the main character. Apparently it looks a lot like a vacuum that actually came out right around 1982 called the Pneumatic International Henry. And it's just a little vacuum with like googly eyes based on it, basically. But the logo for Wiping, despite the weird name, is pretty good. It's got curvy letters and it's stylized. So part of the P is like vacuuming up a dust bunny. The enemies, for reasons I can't understand, are called Badons, Bilbolus, and Bigimbus. So, no idea what's going on there. They could have just called them Dust Bunnies, and I think it would have worked just as well. But getting into the gameplay for Wiping, as I said, it is a Dig Dug-style game, but instead of digging through dirt, you're basically cleaning dirt off of a tile linoleum floor or something like that. The enemies are spread throughout the level and they don't directly seek you out at first, but then eventually they can just kind of go through whatever dirt is left on the floor to get to you. And they can travel in clean spaces as well after you've already cleaned it. And basically you have to shoot them with soapy bubbles to stun them. And then you, you know, run over them to vacuum them up. There are also rugs that sort of take the place of like those rocks from Dig Dug, except instead of digging under them and them falling, you actually walk over the rug. And if you walk all the way over the rug, it rolls up and then like destroys any enemies that are inside it, but then also flies up to the top of the screen or the bottom in a straight line, hitting anything else in the way. It's very wild. Don't know why a rug would do that after being vacuumed. And most of the enemies, they just walk into you to kill you, but there is one specific enemy that has a spear that, like, occasionally stands still and extends the spear a couple spaces ahead of it. At the beginning of each level, you're also briefly shown bonus items that can be picked up once you clean the floor on top of them. They range from everything from a telephone to what looks like it might be a bottle of alcohol to what is either a saxophone or a pipe. Like, it's... everything is buried on this floor under the dirt. And similar to Dig Dug, the last enemy alive will try to run away. Except in this one, instead of running to the top of the screen to escape, they actually escape by running under a rug, which I just love how that fits the theme. It's pretty funny. After that, the game repeats with more enemies, more difficult types of enemy per level, and just keeps going. That's basically it. You're just cleaning up the floor, getting rid of all the dust bunnies, and picking up whatever weird trinkets you can find along the way. For graphics, I actually liked how this game looked. It's very colorful. The sprites have a lot of charm to them, so I gave it a 4 out of 10. Everything is just kind of like weird and cute. The sprites are all multicolored, and the enemies and the vacuum have 2-frame animations for their movements. The enemies are very cute and tiny, and I think because they're so small in the later levels, there can be like 15 to 20 of them on screen at a time, which is great. Although it does get very hectic, as I'll talk about when I get into the gameplay. The map itself just looks okay. Like, the dirt that covers the whole entire map when you first start, it just looks like slime. It's very strange. And the color of it changes every round. I do like the tile floor underneath, but again, it's pretty simple. The rugs are also simple visually, but I really do like the animation of them rolling up and then rolling out again. Your shots are actually like bubbles which pop, which again, nice little attention to detail and pretty good there. And I really like the collectibles that you pick up, all the weird stuff, the alarm clocks, the telephones that can be on the ground. They all have interesting colors, and it seemed like there are at least 10 different collectibles worth different points. So that definitely added a lot of nice visual variety to this game. The digging of the dirt, or wiping of the dirt, I guess, I don't know, just kind of looks the same as any Dig Dug type game, so nothing too special there, but overall it was pretty good looking. For sounds, I gave this a 3.5 out of 10. Wiping does have some music in the background, thankfully. It's really simple and short, though, unfortunately. It feels like maybe 8 bars, so there's some other music mixed in on later levels, but none of it sounded super great. Unfortunately, it got a little maddening pretty fast. I did like the sound effects, though. The bubbles are really cartoony, and when you vacuum up the enemies, it sounds like they make a little, like, surprised yell, which I liked. The noise for picking up collectibles, for some reason, sounds almost identical to the Metal Gear, like, alert surprise noise. So, I mean, I'm biased there. I feel like I mainly just like it because that noise is in there, and it cracked me up every time I heard it. Now let's talk about the gameplay for Wiping. It is definitely a competent Dig Dug game, and it has its own unique gameplay with the rugs and the fact that, you know, instead of popping the enemies, you have to stun them and then run over them. It's fun and plays smoothly, but the difficulty and progress between levels just didn't feel super interesting. It's just adding more enemies. I do like that compared to some other games in this genre, there can actually be a ton of enemies in the later levels, but it just felt kind of samey. And I'm also not too sure how to feel about the bubbles mechanic. Like, I like that you have to stun the enemy first, but the fact that you have to also run over them to get rid of them means that when in the later levels you have like 4 or 5 enemies that their sprites are literally stacked on top of each other, you just have to like stun kite until you only have one stunned, and then you can run over it without dying, and it just seems a little awkward. So I ended up giving it a 3 out of 10 for gameplay. It's pretty good, but it definitely has some strangeness in there. For relevance, I gave it a 4 out of 10. I really don't think that this game is super relevant at all, but I like that it's adding some more ideas to the Dig Dug genre. And overall, that left me with a 3.5 out of 10 for wiping. It's a cute game with a fun theme, weird theme, and some great looking sprites. The music got to me a bit, but I did like the other sound effects a lot, so that brought it up. I still don't know if I'd play it over Dig Dug, though. I feel like the way it increases difficulty is a little bit more interesting. Like, Dig Dug just felt like slightly more enemies and they got faster, whereas this, it's like you have tons of enemies on screen. And I think the variation on the air pump to shooting soap bubbles is pretty fun, too. So, overall, a cool game. Very strange, and we do like our strange games. But I wouldn't say it's, you know, toppling Dig Dug from its throne just yet.
Okay, that's fair. Well, definitely one with that title we had to take a look at.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But this next one, Wes, this next one really surprised me. It's my first review of the day, and it's called Mrs. Dynamite. And if you think, is that a play on Miss Pac-Man or something? Kind of. I mean, it's by Universal, who just came out with Mr. Do, like, not that long ago.
Yeah.
And now they have one called Mrs. Dynamite. Are they related? I couldn't find any evidence that they're like a couple or anything like that. I don't know. I think they were just trying to copy Pac-Man. I don't know. But yeah, this one's called Mrs. Dynamite. And, you know, I played Mr. Do a while ago. It was okay. Nothing special. I thought this was going to be kind of nothing special as well. But I actually really like this one a lot more than Mr. Do. I think it's because it pretty much plays just like Bomberman. But Bomberman hasn't come out yet. And I actually looked up when Bomberman comes out. It comes out in 83. For a computer at first, and at least the first version of Bomberman, I don't think looks as good as this game. I think this game's kind of one-upping Bomberman before Bomberman comes out somehow. So that's got to give you some hope that this game's not going to be too bad. But yeah, I mean, if you know Bomberman, you kind of know what this game is. Basically, you're trapped in a maze. It's like a Pac-Man style maze, and instead of having like infinite bombs, like I feel like is, I mean, I don't really remember Bomberman too much, but I think that's what happens in Bomberman. But instead of having infinite bombs, the bombs are actually like a little pickup on the maze. So you actually have to go find the bombs first. They're not like invisible or anything, but you just have to go and make your way to them and pick them up. Whenever you pick up bombs, it's a pack of three bombs. And there's only, I think, a couple pickups in the maze. So it is possible to like run out of bombs. When that happened for me, it spawned what it called like a super bomb. I didn't know what the super bomb was going to do when I got it, so I picked it up and threw it down immediately. I thought maybe it would just end the level or something, and I used it and it didn't come back. It was like a slightly bigger bomb, but it, you know, I didn't have any enemies near me, and then I was just out of bombs and died. So I guess that's like your last chance. And you have to destroy all the monsters with the bombs that you have. But that shouldn't be too much of a problem if you use the bombs, right? There's probably 12 to 15 bombs on screen and probably 8 enemies to kill, something like that. But your main objective is to destroy the enemies. There's no like little dots like in Pac-Man that you have to pick up or clear the screen like in wiping or anything like that. You know, it's just run around the maze, pick up some bombs, and kill some bad guys. The bad guys are chasing you, but they also have a unique mechanic as well, and I really actually like their mechanic. There are barrels in the maze, and you might think, oh, maybe you can push the barrels around and destroy the monsters, you know, kind of like in Dig Dug with the rocks or something like that. But actually, you can't interact with the barrels at all. That can mean that the barrels can be used as like dead ends and block off certain paths from you because you can't move them. But the enemies can move the barrels, and they will attempt to throw the barrels at you. Or just like if they run over a barrel, they'll push it kind of in the direction that they are moving. And the barrel will keep moving in that direction until it hits a wall. But that can mean that there's like all of a sudden barrels flying down at you, you know, from different corners of the screen. And they move a lot faster than the enemies. Not so fast you can't dodge them. Like, I feel like this game had a really good balance of like being fair with my playing. Like whenever I messed up, I thought that was on me, which is really good. But it's just something else to keep an eye out on, and it really kind of makes you have to look at the broader picture of the larger, like, full playing area, because you can't be surprised when a barrel comes down at you from someplace far away. So I thought it was a really nice mechanic. I liked it a lot. That's kind of all there is to the game. I mean, there's a bunch of different levels in the game that change the layout of the maze, but they all play out pretty much the same. It's just you, some bombs, and some enemies, and they get faster and, you know, gets harder, but it's the same every time. And actually, when I was playing, I got very far. I think I got on like the fourth stage or something before I died. Or I think the first time I played, I died on like level one a couple times. But then once I got it, you know, I got pretty far. There is a little cutscene after, I think, the third stage. The cutscene's very weird. Mrs. Dynamite goes out to a tree. I think there's like baby enemies in the tree. Like, as like, imagine like baby birds up in the nest. And you throw a bomb up there and one falls out, and then that's it. And I tried to see if there were other cutscenes, and I think it just plays that same cutscene after every three waves. So I don't know. But that's kind of all the game is. I mean, it's very much Bomberman. Once you pick up the dynamite, you know, you're not on like a countdown timer and it explodes in 5 seconds. Like, you can keep it and hold on to it until you're ready to throw it down. And then you throw the piece of dynamite down and it kind of like flashes three times and then explodes. So you have time to move around, and you have to, you know, lay the dynamite out a little bit ahead of when you think the enemy's going to come so that they are destroyed in the explosion. And you can destroy multiple enemies in the same stick of dynamite, which is always fun.
Nice.
But that's kind of how the game is. Not too much more to say. Let me get into my ratings for it. As I mentioned, I quite liked the gameplay of this. I found it to be challenging, but fair, which is very rare in 1982, I think. And I thought it was just fun. Like, it kept my attention the whole time, and it was like stressful in a fun way. So I actually went kind of high with the gameplay. I gave it a 4 out of 10. I quite enjoyed it. Feels like Bomberman. I mean, at least from, you know, how I remember Bomberman. So I thought it was good. Graphics, not as good. I gave that a 3.25. I like the enemies. I don't know really what they look like. Maybe like, I don't know. They kind of look like frogs or something, but they're like standing on 2 feet. So it's a little different, and they have a very round, circular body, which is not that frog-like, but they're green and red, kind of like a frog. I'm not really sure what they're supposed to be, but they're cool looking. They're different. They have, you know, Pac-Man ghost vibes, and your character is like a little girl, or it looks like one to me, and she's cool. Got blonde hair and like a red shirt and yellow pants. Everything's multicolored. Everything has nice animation. The bombs, when they blow up, have good animation. The barrels roll really nicely. I really like how the bombs, once you put them down, they flash, you know, to kind of signal that they're about to go off. That's really nice. And I feel like that's a very modern thing that we would expect in a modern game, and they do that here really nicely. So overall, I mean, I think everything that's on screen's good, but the problem is, like, it's a maze, and the vast majority of the maze is just the black background, so that's really boring. I like the sprites. In that way, it kind of reminds me a bit of Pac-Man. You know, Pac-Man, the actual screen's kind of boring, but the sprites are really good. Has that same vibe. I ended up going 3.25 out of 10 for the graphics for those reasons. For sound effects, they're not bad, you know. There's basically a musical tune that loops in the background at all times, which is great. I think the sound effects are a little high-pitched for me. Like, there's times where it goes up a little too high. And you only get one piece of music that plays every level. So that is just the same thing over and over and over again. It's, I think, a decently long bit of music, so it didn't get too annoying on me, but I would have preferred that the music changed level to level to kind of switch it up a bit. There is a unique piece of music that plays for the cutscene. And I think the music is two-voice harmony, so it's not bad at all. There's some interesting sound effects that play as you're playing the game, just normally, like when the dynamite blows up and stuff. They're mostly good. The only sound effect that I really dislike is there's a sound effect that plays, it's kind of like a warning sound effect when you have no dynamite, which I can see, like, if you're putting down a lot of sticks of dynamite and then you're like, oh my god, I'm out, that you would maybe want a sound effect, but it's like a really high-pitched ding, and it's very annoying. I wanted to make sure I have dynamite on me at all times to not hear that sound. Overall, I was fairly happy with it, but there's limitations, you know, one piece of music, some high things, so Went 3.25 out of 10 for the sound effects as well. For relevance, I was a little mixed about this. I ended up going 6 out of 10. On one hand, I can't find too much info on this game. I don't think it's sold particularly well. I think Mr. Do is somehow more popular, even though I like this one a lot better than Mr. Do. Both by Universal, which is a decently good-sized company. At first, I thought maybe I should give this like less than 5 for relevance, but then I thought, nah, it probably isn't going to inspire Pac-Man. Or not Pac-Man, Bomberman. I tried to look up what actually inspired Bomberman, and it's actually the next game we're going to talk about that you did, Wes.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
I don't know. I don't really know how much I should credit it. I ended up going a little higher than like a 5 out of 10 with a 6 out of 10 just because it feels just like Bomberman. So I feel like it's, it had to inspire somebody to kind of go down that route. Overall, that left me with a 3.5 out of 10. You know, for what the game is, I thought it was quite good, you know, like, I wasn't expecting it to be good. Like, graphically, if you just glance at this game, it looks like a 3 out of 10 game, or maybe a 3.25. You don't expect it to be a 3.5 out of 10. That's like, it's punching above its weight a little bit. Obviously, it has some flaws, and it's not the best to look at or to listen to, but it makes up for it with good gameplay. And it's a nice challenge, but very fair game. I really don't have much bad to say about it in that respect. So, a pleasant surprise for me for Miss Dynamite.
Very cool. Yeah. I just think the theming of just like dropping dynamite on bugs is fun too. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, that's very interesting because, what you know, my next game and this maybe, you know, both together coming out around the same time in September could definitely lead to a combination inspiration for Bomberman.
Oh yeah. Well, I feel like we've been hyping it up, Wes. It's the title of today's episode.
Yes.
Let's tell everybody about Pango. What's going on with that? Why is that a big deal?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you why Pango is a big deal. It's a very cool game. You know, the main thing is probably there's sliding blocks in this, which is fun. Sliding ice blocks that you use to fight the enemies. But Pango was published by Sega, actually developed by a company called Coreland. There's some fun little Easter egg sort of things that people have found about this. There's hidden credits. If you actually like hit a series of buttons on the main menu screen, it tells you like who developed it, who designed it, who made the screen, stuff like that. And there's actually more credits hidden in the developer text. If you like look at the CPU and go into the text there. So I guess the, you know, Japanese developers were finding a way to get their name out there, maybe striving for what that, Activision was trying to do with getting their developer names out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the cabinet is pretty simple. It does feature the adorable Pango, though, who's fantastic. He is a red penguin with a bow tie, and it's just like really big on the sides, and Pango's super cute. So even though the rest of the cabinet's kind of bland, that made up for it. Pango is an interesting maze game where the core mechanic is sliding blocks, which I don't think we've ever really seen before. I think
maybe like some computer games, but nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe like some puzzle solving, but not in the way that this works, which I feel like reminds me of like every Zelda game where you had to slide a block and have to figure out a puzzle because you couldn't stop it. It just slides all the way to the end. And that's exactly how Pango works. It like slides all the way in a line until it hits something else. The basic setup is a lot like Pac-Man in that you have a maze to navigate and creatures chasing after you, but the big difference there is that the maze is made up of all of these ice blocks that you can push around. You have to kill all of the enemies, which are called snow bees. They're just like round blobs with noses that apparently can sting, so I guess that's where the bee part comes in. And you kill them on each level by sliding blocks of ice into them, and as you know, if they're caught in between the sliding block and another block or the wall, they get smushed. The blocks travel in a straight line until they hit something, like I mentioned. And yeah, a very interesting type of gameplay that we haven't really seen before. the enemy snow bees melt blocks as they walk around. So you're sort of, they're not necessarily always chasing you, although if you're nearby, they chase you. But you also have to deal with the fact that they're basically melting your ammunition, you know, because you're using the blocks to attack them. Sometimes that's beneficial because you can't push a block if there's another block on the other side of it. So if they're like destroying blocks in a line and you're on the opposite side of that line, when there's only one block in between the two of you, you can now push it and smush the snow bee. But yeah, if you let it go on too long, then you lose all the blocks and you're kind of in big trouble. Snow bees also periodically spawn out of remaining ice blocks. I think there's a counter at the top of the screen to show you how many there are left on each level. And you have to destroy all of them to get to the next stage. There's also a fun little bonus thing, which is three diamond blocks. They can't be destroyed by you or the snow bees, but they can still be moved around. And if you move them all into a line, basically just a 1x3 line, you get bonus points and the screen actually like pauses, stars light up on the border. It actually stuns the enemies, which is fun because I didn't know at first that this like bonus point thing actually has a gameplay mechanic. Speaking of stunning, if any of these snow bees are on one of the outer border walls, you can actually hit the outer border wall and push it like you would push an ice block, and it shakes the border wall and stuns any snow bees that were touching it. And when they're stunned, instead of running over them or hitting them with a block, you can just walk over them to kill them. It's less points, but then you get them out of the way. And I forget if I mentioned it, but you can also destroy blocks. Basically, if there's a block in the way and you can't push it, but you keep pushing against it, you'll just destroy that block and then move to the next one. So this whole pattern of pushing the ice blocks and smashing the snow bees goes on for a couple different mazes, or for different mazes for 16 different stages, and then it loops. But all of it's just more enemies in differently arranged stages. With that being said, let me get into my ratings for Pango. For graphics, I gave this a 4 out of 10. Pango has a lot of visual character to it, even though I feel like there are aspects of the graphics that are pretty simplistic, unfortunately. For example, as we've come to expect with maze games, the background's just all black. So I saw it coming, but unfortunately a little bland still. And the borders, the walls on the outside are just matrix dots, sort of like they're just lines with made up of a bunch of dots, but they do have this really nice wiggle effect when you push up against them and they become a squiggly line. So I like that a lot. All of the sprites are great and multicolored. The snow bee blobs look good with their little nose and eyes and these weird like sort of ice scrapers that they pull out whenever they're breaking down the ice blocks.
They look like punching gloves.
Yeah. I'm not sure if they were supposed to be like chisels for breaking ice blocks or if they are just punching the blocks. I have no idea, but it looks hilarious either way. And the ice blocks themselves look really good too. I mean, they're all the same like deep dark kind of blue, but they have nice white shine lines on them. So they give you the feel that they're ice for sure. Pango, of course, looks awesome. It's just a cute little penguin with flippers and a white belly. I'm sad you can't really see his bow tie. You know, they put it on the side of the cabinet, but it still looks really good. They all have different sprites for the different directions that they're facing, too. A Pango even has some, like, shine lines on the back of the head for when it's turned all the way around to make it look like there's some light glare or something. So a lot of nice detail there. And I really liked that Pango's extra lives in the top left corner are, like, doing the thing where they have like one hand on the hip and leaning against a wall with the other hand. Just gives them a little character, which I like. And there's also some simple cutscenes in between the rounds, definitely a la Pac-Man, with penguins that are all different colors dancing after two stages. And then in between every stage, sort of like very much like Pac-Man, Pango just running like right to left or left to right off screen, sometimes slipping and falling and things like that. The cutscenes, though, they do just kind of look okay because they're taking part on a black screen, but it is fun that that animation's there. But what really caught me off guard is there's this intro cutscene before you put a coin in that just shows like this huge Arctic landscape with like ice floes and everything, a bunch of different colored penguins running from the snow bees over the ice. And then above there's like this green, yellow, multicolored changing mountains and sky for like a Aurora Borealis sort of effect. I was not expecting it at all because it looks... But it looks very good.
Looks way better than the actual game.
It does. Yeah. It's kind of a disappointment when you get into the game, but at least Pango still looks good, you know? But since it was just that intro cutscene that looked like phenomenal, I couldn't go too high on the graphics, so that's why I ended up landing on a 4. Still a great looking game for the time. Moving on to sounds now, I gave this a 3.5 out of 10. It's a bit of a mixed bag here. Some similar stuff going on as Wiping, actually, where you got background music. The background music's pretty good, but it is a pretty short loop again. I will say I like this a little bit better, though. It's got two-part harmony, and it changes a little bit as it goes, so it's not just like 4 bars repeating. It's at least got something going on for it. But it did end up driving me a little crazy towards the end of it. Maybe that's just the songs of the era, and I'm being a little too hard on it, but... Overall, I still like the tune, and the tune actually does change for later levels, which is nice. The other sounds are pretty good, like sliding the blocks, destroying the snow bees, destroying ice. All of that was decent, but there weren't any real standouts for me in the other sounds in the game. Gameplay, though, I mean, we're talking about some really interesting stuff here. It's a maze game, but you are altering the maze as you go, sliding these ice blocks, and it feels really novel for the time, and I enjoyed it a lot. You have to think a lot more strategically, and, you know, it feels like you got to plan out what blocks you use to kill what enemies, because it alters how you can move and all that. A lot of times you just end up throwing blocks wherever and seeing what happens, but still, it feels like you can be tactical if you want to. Lining up the diamond blocks for bonus points was also pretty hard, but it felt really rewarding since you get to see the screen light up in all these bright colors, and it stuns all the enemies just like when you push up against the wall and the enemies are against it, so you'd get less points for destroying the enemies that way, but if you want, you could just real quick run over all of them while they're stunned from the bonus and make things easier for yourself. Also, just throwing a giant block of ice into the snow bees and smushing them against the wall feels super satisfying. It's very fun when you do, especially when you get a big line of them at once. Like if you get a corridor and get 3 of them at once, it multiplies your points and feels very good. My main disappointment with the gameplay, though, is that it's just a bit too repetitive. I mean, it's really just the map changes. That's kind of all it is. There's more snow bees maybe, but the game just gets harder. Things gets faster, but nothing else really changes. You know, I wish there was different types of blocks other than that diamond and ice blocks or something, some new gimmicks that show up, but that might be asking too much for the time. I'm not sure. Still, it was really fun, so I ended up giving it a 4 out of 10 for gameplay. Moving on to relevance now, I feel like this is a fairly well-remembered game, so I gave it a 7.5 out of 10, and it's the first we've seen doing this like sliding block combat sort of stuff, so definitely relevant. And overall, that left me with a 3.75 out of 10 for Pango. It is a solid game with unique gameplay, charming characters. Gameplay does get a little samey after a while, and the sounds could get a little annoying, but still overall, it's got some great stuff going on for it. Very fun and very unique. Definitely worth checking out if you've never seen it or heard of it.
All right, man. Nice. I'm glad you got to check that one out. One that I knew we had to check out from the moment that I saw it.
Yeah.
I mean, if the goal is to make like little cute characters, which I feel like is the goal of everybody in 1982, a penguin is just going to be a hit. Like, why didn't anybody do that before?
Right. Yeah. Adorable, it's like penguin. Perfect.
Yeah.
And I forgot to mention, but when you talked about the Bomberman connection, sliding the ice blocks does feel very much like when in Bomberman you get the upgrade so you can kick bombs and they go in the straight line.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that.
I could definitely see how that specifically, you know, mazes and then kicking things down a corridor could kind of be inspiration there.
Mm-hmm. All right, but let's move on. We've got some Pango clones to go over. We've got Pango by Marty Coles, Penguinos by Aincar, Penta by Grinby Shoji, Penta by AB Donamon's Automater, and two versions of Pango on a handheld format, one by Bandai and one by Intrect.
All right, but now let's talk about some computer games. We've got Zork 3 here, finally the end of the Zork trilogy. Zork 3, the Dungeon Master by Infocom. This one came out on Apple II, Atari 8-bit, DOS, TRS-80, TRS-80 Coco. It's everywhere. It's all over the place. And despite, you know, it's the final game of the Zork trilogy, and it's pretty well remembered, for us, it's going to just kind of be more of the same. I think the story might be maybe a little bit better because it's a climactic conclusion, but it's still all text-based. So, at least for us,
yeah, we didn't want to
review it. But yeah, no graphics. So, not something we wanted to review, but definitely cool.
All right, moving on. This one, I thought for sure we'd review, because I thought it was really cool when I first saw it. It's called Baja Buggies by GameStar and SoftSmith. Came out sometime in 1982 for the Atari 8-bit computer, and it's basically a home computer version of Pole Position that actually runs pretty well and looks pretty darn good. So, but you know, we've played Pole Position before. We've got some other cool ones today, but I really like this one. I thought it was really nice.
Yeah, and going along with that, we have Night Rally by Arcade Plus, which was actually the prototype version of Baja Buggies. This one was set in nighttime, though, and Arcade Plus actually becomes GameStar when they release Baja Buggies.
All right, and then moving on to some computer games still, we've got Frogger by Sierra Online for the Atari 8-bit. This is just a port of Frogger, but it looks and plays fantastic, and the music is going hard on the Atari 8-bit, so that's, you love to see that. We also have Zenith by Gabelli Software. He's back for the Apple II, like always. This one came out sometime in 1982 and is a flight sim with a good frame rate and decent graphics. The speed of it really makes you feel like you're flying, and it might be the best, kind of first-person flying game that we've seen yet. So definitely check out Zenith.
All right, but then let's wrap things up by talking about some console games. We have the ColecoVision here and a couple more games that we're going to talk about. The first one is Cosmic Avenger. This one was just a classic scramble type game.
And then we're going to do my second review of the day. It's a game I've been looking forward to reviewing for a long time. It is Smurf Rescue in Gargamel's Castle for the ColecoVision. And with a name like that, you might not think that this game is a very serious game. But I love this game. I think it's nice. Awesome. For those of you who remember, like, the ColecoVision, we've only seen it, I think, one other time on the podcast, and that was when it launched, and it only launched with Donkey Kong, and that's the only thing we covered when it launched. So it's good to see some other games, and
yeah,
it's good to see that they're not just Pac-Man and Dig Dug. You know what I mean? Like, this is a really unique game. But yeah, Smurfs Rescue at Gargamel Castle, it kind of plays almost like Pitfall, where it's a bunch of screens that are kind of connected to one another. The main mechanic is moving left to right and jumping at the right times to jump over obstacles. But unlike in Pitfall, where the main goal of Pitfall was to find treasure and there was like 255 rooms to go through, this one is more like there's 20 rooms. And at the end of the 20 rooms is, like, I think it's Smurfette. I don't know if is that lore. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know the Smurf lore. I mean, the guy you're playing, I've seen him in the manual just called the Smurf, which I thought Smurfs were like a race. So I don't know. But yeah, you play as Smurf and you rescue Smurfette. But basically, she's at the end of the castle, which the castle is like the last couple screens of the adventure. And you have to jump up and grab her and then you win, basically. And it starts over again. And you just keep playing until you lose. So in some ways, it's not really like a winning because you just keep going. But yeah, at least there's kind of like a finality to it where you could say, like, oh, yeah, I rescued her. And then that's kind of the main thing. So it's a little bit different from Pitfall. But why do I like this game so much? I think it comes down to two things, the music and the graphics. I think the graphics on the ColecoVision, they look phenomenal, man. I think there's so many great, like, pops of color. Your Smurf is multicolored. Like, I think everybody's a multicolored sprite in this, except for maybe, like, there's bats in the cave and it's just a single color bat. But, like, Smurfette is a multicolored sprite. And the backgrounds are very well detailed. I mean, you've got trees with two different colors of green, blue sky in the background, and a trunk. And there's, like, some feathering going on to differentiate the different shades. So it's not just, like, a hard cut line between two different shades of color. There's a bit of a overlap there, which is a really nice effect. It happens on the path that you walk as well, which is not a straight line, but has a little bit of curve to it, even though your guy walks straight. But yeah, you start out walking through the forest. You eventually walk through like a plains area with just hilly backgrounds, some clouds that have, they're multicolored clouds with gray and white to give a little bit of a shadow there. Flowers on the ground. You walk through a cave. The cave is a little weird. Like the ground you're walking on is like purple and black. There's like black, I guess, shadows of vines or stalagmites or tites, you know, at the top of the screen. But the main background is like yellow, which is a bit of a weird, strange color, but I'll go with it. You then walk through another field, except this time you can see the castle in the background, which is cool. And then finally you walk into the castle. There's actually like a bit of a garden screen before, which kind of reminds me of the forest, but there's like a fence that you have to jump over. And then in the castle, it's like these black bricks as a wall behind you, with some like cracks in them and spider webs and a kind of purple blue stone path that you walk on. And then in the final screen, there's, I guess, the boss. I don't know. There's not really like a boss character. There's just a big skull. He doesn't move or do anything, you know, that would indicate that it's like a living skull or like a bad guy. It could just be like an actual just inanimate skull. But basically you have to jump on that and then jump up one more time onto a platform where Smurfette is to rescue her. There's not really any enemies in the game. There are some bats that kind of fly down at you and you have to just dodge, but they're not really that dangerous. There's no one like really hunting you. There is a weird mechanic where there's an energy meter on screen. Apparently the energy refreshes once you get to a new like zone or area. So from forest to plains or plains to cave or something like that. Otherwise it slowly ticks down. I mean, I was playing and I never had any issues with the energy, but I guess it's there for people that go really slowly. I don't know why that would be a thing, but a bit of a weird mechanic. It didn't really affect anything. But yeah, it's pretty much kind of like Pitfall. You're jumping over stuff. The jumping is really strange. Let me actually get into my ratings and I'll talk about that more. So for gameplay, for I'm just going to shorten it to Smurf. No, I don't know. Rescuing Gargamel. I can't shorten it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the gameplay, I give it a 3.25 out of 10. The controls on this are very unique, but I actually kind of dug it. It's different. So normally, like, if I'm walking, like, left to right, I'm holding down the right button because I'm going that way. And then if I want to jump, in this game, you have to hit the up button. And I think in most modern games, you'd be able to hold down right and then hit the up button while holding down right, and your guy would just jump and move to the right at the same time with some momentum, right? But in this game, if the walking to the right button is held down and you hit jump, nothing happens. You just keep walking right. So you actually have to let go of holding right and then hit jump. Now, if you do that too slowly, your guy will lose his momentum walking to the right and just jump straight up, which is not good when you have to jump over something, you know, with momentum. So Basically, you have to switch the keys almost at the same time. So it's like right up, you know, like lift one finger up, put the other finger down.
Right.
It's really not bad to do. It's just different. And I actually kind of liked it. I felt like it had a nice kind of feel to it. So I actually enjoyed that a lot. If you do mess up the jump and like you're so close to the object that you can't hit right anymore, otherwise you're going to walk right into it, you can just hit the up jump button. You'll jump straight up on your first attempt, but then if you hit it a second time, you actually jump diagonally to the right, even if you never pressed right. So it's another way to kind of jump up diagonally to the right, and that's just by jumping up twice, which is a really handy mechanic that got me out of some sticky situations. I think it uses some energy, but again, that was never an issue for me. And also, you have to use that type of jump at the very end when you jump on the skull, because there's no room to move right on the skull to jump up again. So you have to kind of double jump off the skull. Honestly, it felt really nice. Felt really good. You know, the game's fairly simple. There's not a whole lot to it. But I feel like I could say the same pretty much about Pitfall. I mean, Pitfall had vine swinging and this one doesn't, but I thought the weird jumping mechanic, which was actually kind of fun to use, was enough for me. So I gave it a 3.25. Pretty enjoyable. There is, quote-unquote, two-player, that involves switching once one player dies.
Oh boy.
I don't know. For graphics, I gave this a 3.5 out of 10. I think it looks great. Smurf guy looks great. Smurfette looks cool. I love all the different locations you walk through. I mean, it's a lot more varied than something like Pitfall for sure. And I don't know, there's just a lot of different colors on screen that look nice. And the feathering helps make it look a little bit more special or more detailed than it probably really is. But you could really tell how the high resolution of the ColecoVision when it's doing the feathering, right? That's pretty cool. So I gave the graphics pretty high. The sound effects, man, Wes, I mean, I'm kind of speechless. It's like three voice harmony going on background music the whole time. And nice. There's different musical themes for every stage that you go in. And I mean, the stages don't have any loading screens or anything. It's just one after the next. And weirdly, there's more music than there are like screens for the stages. So I was actually going through the stages so fast that the music kept restarting with new music because I would get to the next area. It was like one of the most annoying things about it. I was like, I just want to listen to this music. I probably should have just went a little slower. But the music's great. I didn't have any problem with it. I don't think it's too high or anything. And yeah, three voice harmony, multiple different tunes, like sign me up. So nice. That's cool. One other thing I have to say, I forgot to mention this, I guess it's in gameplay or graphics. I mean, something that I just laugh out loud every time I see it is when you mess up a jump and you lose a life in this game. The sprite of the Smurf, there's no real death animation. The sprite just flips horizontal and there's like a thunk sound. It's just, it's hilarious, man. I love it. It's like totally jank, but in the most fun way. But okay, let's move on to relevance. I gave relevance a 7 out of 10. And I actually want to explain that score by talking about the overall score, which is a 3.5 out of 10. The reason I'm going so high with the relevance is that a 3.5 out of 10 overall, that's the same score I gave Mrs. Dynamite. So I think this is the first time ever in the history of video games that we've covered where a home console game is at the level of an arcade game. And I really believe that. You know, I didn't try to mess with the scores or make one higher than the other. I just wrote what I felt was right for both. And Miss Dynamite was not a bad game at all. I think I mentioned that was like an above average arcade game.
Yeah.
And I truly believe, like, you look at the graphics for this game compared to Miss Dynamite, you would say this probably looks better. And it definitely sounds better than Miss Dynamite. I think Miss Dynamite has better gameplay, and I rated it as such. But that's never happened before. So we're getting into a different type of era here where the home console games are going to be on par with the arcade games, and I'm really excited about that. I think the NES is going to play a big part in that when that comes out.
Yeah,
but yeah, the ColecoVision is showing that it is a force to be reckoned with. I think it definitely looks way better than the Intellivision or pretty much any console we've ever done, and I'm just so excited to see what else is going to come out for this one because it's got the specs, man. Like, the resolution's so high, the sound is so good, can do color, and great animation, so, yeah, I'm excited to see what comes next.
Yeah, for sure, it's an exciting time to be playing these console games.
Yeah.
An interesting choice to go with the Smurfs, but I feel like the Smurfs are definitely popular at this time, for sure, and I love it. It's not really something we've ever seen a game of before.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't really speak to the Smurf lore, to be fair.
I only tangentially...
I don't know who Gargamel is.
He's just the big evil, like, human dude who's always trying to ruin the Smurfs' day, from what I know. Yeah. And I think they're, like, you know, they're like tiny. Like the Smurfs are probably
so
like,
he's not a skull.
No, he's like a dude. Okay. So
gotcha.
It's Gargamel's castle. He's not Gargamel's in... not there.
Yeah.
He was out for the day. Yeah. But we do have one more game to briefly mention here for the ColecoVision in September, and that is Venture, which is a clone of the arcade game. Doesn't really seem like a great one to represent the graphical quality of the ColecoVision, but I'm sure it played well. I'm sure we got more great stuff to look forward to on this system. I'm excited.
All right, but with that, we will end it there for today. We covered Pango. We covered a new piece of hardware, the NTEX Adventure Vision, and also wrapped up a new piece of hardware, the NTEX Adventure Vision. We did Wiping and Miss Dynamite, and finally Smurf Rescue at Gargamel's Castle, all of which I thought were very good. So
yeah,
super happy. I mean, we're in September now. I mean, all the games are good. That's the great thing about towards the end of the year. It's just packed, man. Good games.
Absolutely. And so, you know, as Ben mentioned, we've got more great stuff to come too as we get closer to the end of the year here. So make sure you stick with us. Follow us on X, where we post announcements about our episodes. Check out our website, where we've got great information on things that we've covered before. And if you have any questions, feel free to send us an email.
And with that, we'll catch you next time.
See you all next time.